everybody. Bill Buckmaster with you, along with my buddy Tom Fairbanks. Welcome to the Buckmaster Show. We are off and running on the Thursday edition, the 7th day of September 2023. Tom, by my reckoning, and I go out and water, between 5:30 and 6:30 every morning, the temperatures have been normally all summer, like about 80 degrees in our garden. A couple of days ago, we had like 77, and it felt actually kind of cool. Pleasant, cool. But now, this morning, back to the same old thing.
Well, your prediction of a heat warning came true.
Here we go again.
We had it yesterday. It was a watch. Boy. Now it's a warning. Well, Saturday morning, 10 a.m. to Sunday, 8 p.m.
Okay. Excess heat warning.
It's going to be around 108, maybe okay. 109.
Well, that's enough, hopefully, for the end of 2023. The summer of discontent will finally be over. The Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. We come to you on the radio station KVOI, Tucson's trusted voice for news and talk. We're at AM 1030. We have worldwide live listening on my website, which is buckmastershow.com, where we piggyback the live feed from kvoi.com. Anytime during the hour, folks can join us on our live line, which is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. 790-2040 is our live line number. And once a month, we catch up with Pima County Supervisor, the lone Republican on the five-member supervisorial board. He represents District Number 4. His name is Steve Christie, midway through his second four-year term. And is he running for re-election? He's been running for re-election. Of course, because he's very open about the fact that he loves being a Pima County Supervisor. Hey, Steve, how are you?
I'm doing great, Bill. And before we start, I just want to join the community and express and convey my sincerest condolences over your recent loss.
Thank you so much. What a tough one it has been. Every day, every hour is a challenge. And the 1 hour of the day that feels like normal, you got it right here on the radio, where I can kind of forget about the loss of Ann. Ann departed 3 weeks already, 3 weeks today. And yesterday, by the way, we spent the whole hour with Dr. Victoria Mazes from the Center for Integrated Medicine just talking about death and dying and my experience. And a lot of people found the show very helpful. I know it was hard for me to do, but I found it helpful. And it is available on our podcast at buckmastershow.com. So a shocking loss from diagnosis to death in 10 weeks. Married for 51 years. Boy, you just don't get over that right away, if ever, Steve Christie.
I'm certain you don't, and I think it's important that you do know that you have a wide and loving community that know you for many, many years, and you've become a member of our family, and so hopefully that knowledge will give you the comfort and the strength you need to endure what you're going through. And I'm glad you have this hour to spend as some sort of maybe a diversion or distraction. And I will try to be as entertaining to you as I possibly can. And yes, I do. I don't know if I explained anything to you before on your show about, but I really do love being supervisor, and you kind of hit the nail and took my wind out of my sails for my final close. But in any event,
yeah,
I appreciate that. I appreciate you remembering.
You know, life is all about chapters, as you know. I'm looking at this, what I'm going through is chapter 3 of my life. There was the chapter before I met Ann at the University of Arizona. That was chapter 1. I met her in 1967. Then there was the chapter with Ann. Now there's chapter 3. And I was thinking about your own life, Steve Christie. You really had, right there in the middle of your chapters was Steve Christie and his automobile shop. I mean, and you still Google Steve Christie Tucson, and the auto dealership will still come up, but it does say permanently closed.
Well, that it is. And I do find that interesting that it's still showing up. And again, as we've talked before on this issue, I'm remembered more for my car dealer days than I am for being a supervisor, which I think is indicative of some sort of a comment. But in any event, it is a tribute to the advertising firm, and we had several of them over the 30 plus to 40 years that I was owning and operating that dealership. We spend a lot of money getting our name and our brand out there over those years. And to this day, even after selling it in 2007, it's still remembered very strongly in the community. And I think that's a testament to the power of advertising.
And I would venture to say, Supervisor Christie, that there are people driving around Tucson right now who purchased their automobile or truck from your shop.
Yes, it's factual. We sold an awful lot of vehicles, new and used, and took good care of thousands of customers in our service and parts department. And I get photos every now and then of someone in like Duluth, Minnesota, or Montpelier, Vermont, and they'll have pulled up behind either a Chrysler or a Jeep product, and they'll see Steve Christie Chrysler Jeep Tucson, Arizona, and they'll send me these pictures.
Yeah.
It always kind of jolts me back, like, my goodness, I can't believe that this late after I sold it. How many years is that now? 16 years?
Yeah, 16.
Those vehicles are still running and people are still remembering.
Yeah. Before we talk about our signature topic today, which will be RTA next, because there was a news release put out by Farhad Mogimi, the head of RTA. But before we go to that, I wondered, is there an update on the Mount Lemmon? Mount Lemmon District, of course, is part of your supervisorial district. You know I love to say that word, part of District 4. Perfect time of year up on Mount Lemmon. They had a lot more rain than many of us had here in the valley. What's the word on what are the merchants saying now with the new hotel up there?
Oh, they're thrilled. It's a terrific facility. It's a boutique style of a lodge, and it's very upgraded, and it has a lot of amenities and of course a beautiful venue in the village of Summer Haven, as well as architecturally a real delight to the eyes, as well as a comfort to stay there. And all the other merchants are just thrilled to have another drawing attraction to the Summer Haven community. And you were speaking to the temperatures that you mm-hmm. experienced first thing in the morning in your gardens. I was just reading the high for Mount Lemmon is going to be 79 degrees.
Oh, there's a hint of fall in the air somewhere here, and it's up at Summer Haven. I was just curious, Supervisor, is there a master plan for their development up there? Because they are growing, you know, with the amenities. Do they have some kind of a master plan?
Not a master plan per se. It's kind of one of those situations where property has been in families for many years, and you do have a lot of restrictions up there with Pima County as far as development services is concerned. You have parking issues, you have capacity issues, you have traffic issues, and of course you have Department of Transportation issues with the Mount Lemmon Highway being open and closed at various stages with repairs and maintenance, and then of course the weather has a huge factor, particularly in the winter time, and that comes into a whole nother area, because then you have the ski attractions. So there's not necessarily a full master plan. There's a lot of speculators that are looking up there because of its attractiveness and because it's a very popular spot for tourism. But I would think that as things progress, master plan or not, there's going to be continued and increased interest in growth, either from the residential or the commercial side. So So it's an exciting time up there on the mountain, and it's very busy, as you can well imagine. The weekends are very busy, and parking's always a issue, and everybody needs to keep their patience in check and make sure that they follow the rules accordingly. And for the most important issue, don't leave your trash up there.
Yeah, that's a big one. We are up against a break, and then when we come back, we're going to talk about this timetable. There is now a chronology from RTA about RTA Next, the draft plan, and then leading up to the election. I want to go over some of these dates with you, Steve, Christy, but before we do that, I want to talk about Mona's Danish Bakery. I could always use comfort food right about now, and Mona's is the place for that, certainly. Home of the Danish Kringle, northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise, Mona's has beautiful variety of European-style pastries and breads. Steve and the team do just a beautiful job preparing lovely pastries, and they do a nice lunch, too. They're open right now for lunch. They're at the northeast corner of Swan and Sunrise. They open the doors at 6:30. People are waiting, and I don't blame them. They want their coffee and a Danish. Great place to start your day. Our day continues on the Buckmaster Show. Be right back with Pima County Supervisor Steve Christie. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com.
The Regional Transportation Authority's 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, pedestrian, bicycle, and many other transportation improvements across the region. Pima County voters approved the plan in 2006, and the RTA is working with the Citizens Advisory Committee to prepare and present a new draft plan as early as 2023 for public review. Learn more about the process at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. Cushman & Wakefield PICOR is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield PICOR offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at PICOR.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's PICOR.com. Call us at 748-7100. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. We are in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios. This is a perfect time of year to go buy Green Things and take care of all of your gardening needs. 13-acre site, Green Things at 3384 East River Road. And my garden got beat up on a couple of those hailstorm, so there is plenty to replace at our place, and I'm sure I'm not alone. GreenThingsAZ.com and Zocalo Village, their sister business, ZocaloVillage.com, for all of that beautiful Talavera pottery and beautiful handcrafted merchandise from Mexico, Latin America, and Europe. Pima County Supervisor, representing District 4, Republican Steve Christie, is with us on the live line. And I do want to talk about this news release that was issued yesterday by the RTA Next Group. We now have a timetable starting now with December the 6th, the deadline for the RTA Next draft plan. Some of your thoughts, Steve Christie, about this timetable.
Well, it's important to remember why and how that timetable got extended, and it dealt with a lot of disagreement on the Citizens Advisory Committee as to where and how the RTA 2 is supposed to develop and what its priorities and goals and missions are. There's a lot of ideological issues with the membership of the Citizens Advisory Committee. A lot of diverse thoughts about where and how the funding should be spent and for what. And I think this has been causing a lot of grinding of the gears, so to speak, without any pun intended, that slows down the whole process. And the disagreement can even filter into the procedures of the meetings. If there's not enough people showing up, they won't have a quorum and nothing gets done. And so these types of holdups seem to be more and more frequent, to the point where it was looking like the original deadline was not going to be met. So I believe it was General Maxwell on the PAG Council and the RTA board that determined that the best thing was that we don't really have to have such a stringent deadline, and that it can be extended, and hopefully it will allow for more agreement, more collaboration, and more uniformity of ideas as to how we proceed. I think obviously it's going to come down to, as I pointed out, an ideological and political difference of how we want the next phase of our transportation regional plan to unfold. Of course, there's the thoughts that the important thing is that we, as RTA affiliates as well as supporters, we want to make sure that the traffic, the automobile traffic and any kind of motorized traffic, gets from point A to point B throughout the valley in an expeditious manner and in an efficient manner that can have people get to their jobs, to their lifestyle, to their functions, to their homes and families and schools in a relatively unencumbered fashion. And this was the founding principle of the original RTA, is that there was such gridlock and deadlock in our traffic and traffic jams and excessive wait times at intersections that people got fed up, and that's what started the original RTA. And that was its mission, was to alleviate that gridlock. Well, a lot of folks still feel that there is gridlock in Pima County, and we've heard other voices say that we're over-analyzing or overestimating exactly how much traffic there's going to be. But even with the newly revamped Broadway corridor from downtown all the way out to Country Club, you go pretty much any time during day, and it's pretty bumper to bumper. And
yeah,
they were saying that we don't need to have all this expansion, and we don't need to have the additional lanes for traffic, and we need more bicycle lanes and more bus lanes. But nonetheless, there's an awful lot of vehicular traffic that is now significant on a wholly new constructed Broadway Boulevard. So I think that's got to be the forefront, is we need to get traffic from point A to point B in an expeditious manner. Now there's the talk that's really causing, I think, a lot of the consternation on the Citizens Advisory Committee, of what they call streamlining or dieting or slimming down or whatever their term is, the originally proposed road styles. Instead of four lanes, they want down to three. Instead of three lanes, they want down to two. And in addition, they want bike lanes and pedestrian walks and modes of public transportation to take the place of vehicular traffic patterns. And I think this is going to be a real problem because I'm sorry to say it, but I don't think it's a secret. If you look at bus ridership, it is very limited and very small compared to what people use for their most important conveyance, and that's their personal automobiles. And I think the whole issue is, what is it that we want to do? Do we want to be able to get from point A to point B, or do we want to have the appearance of being a very cultural city or a green city of, you know, less traffic lanes and more bike and pedestrian? And here's the thing that I always find funny is you've been mentioning it practically every day on your show about the quote unquote extreme or excessive heat.
Yeah.
It makes it very difficult for people to want to walk or ride a bike in the middle of summer. And
yes,
here we are arguing about building bike lanes and pedestrian walkways. They have their place and they should be included, but it's a matter of priorities and dominance. And I think what the General Maxwell was trying to do is say, okay, look, we got to work these things out. We want this RTA2 to succeed. And in order to do that, we're going to have to come to some agreement. I remember the very last day of the RTA1, before the plan went into effect, we had a big meeting at the DoubleTree Hotel with the entire Citizens Advisory Committee. And we ironed out in that it was basically they locked the doors and said, you're not leaving until you come to an agreement. And we made an agreement about how we wanted to proceed and shook hands on it. And that was it. That's got to happen at some point with this current Citizens Advisory Committee. And they need to decide, are they going to collaborate and work together to find common ground, or are they going to dig their heels in and take a stand and not let up or give up?
Well, the time is running. January to June of next year is supposed to be the public outreach. So there's got to be agreement before the end of the year on this, because the election will be in May. That's the goal, May of 2025.
That's correct. And you know, you just mentioned that here we are already looking into fall, and August is behind us, and we're already into September. So time waits for no person, and I think it's time that people maybe put aside their ideological differences and work closer to figuring out what is best for the transportation issues for our community.
And that you nailed it, Supervisor, about this division. It's the bike paths and the public transportation versus kind of the roads, and there's got to be a compromise, or this thing's somehow this initial plan. There's got to be, you've got to hammer this out and really come to a consensus.
Well, absolutely, and I think people are falling short and being very nearsighted about the available bicycle recreation facilities that we have in Pima County with our loop and with our bike lanes. Part of the RTA originally included bike lanes, and they've done a phenomenal job of providing them. Personally, I'm not an avid bicyclist, but I think it's that bicycling has been great for our community with the tour and all of the other bicycle issues that have really made Tucson stand out as a bicycle community. But I would never ride a bicycle in the major thoroughfares of downtown
No.
Tucson or anywhere in Tucson. But there are provisions for people who want to do that. And that, I think, needs to be underlined and underscored, that there are bike paths, there are bike lanes and avenues and whole areas devoted to bicycles. And to want to spend millions and millions of more dollars for more bike lanes, I think is not a prudent way to spend tax dollars. And I think we really need to look at what is being used as a mode of transportation and what needs to be supported in order to accommodate that mode of transportation. And in my mind, people will not want to give up their cars, and they will not want to give up their they're motorized vehicles, and they don't want to take the bus. Many people can't ride their bike to work or to school or things of this nature. I've heard numerous people say, I could never get to my job if I had to rely on the buses. Mm. So I think it's important that we understand that there needs to be a focus on what mode of transportation is being utilized the most, and that's the one where we need to center our efforts and our energy and our dollars.
Yeah, and again, time, as you said, time waits for nobody, man or woman or animal, because time is running out on the RTA and the RTA Next program. Okay. Steve Christie, any final thoughts before we say goodbye to you?
No, I don't know if you were aware or not, but I love being supervisor.
Well, I have heard that before, and we will let you get on loving being a supervisor. Thank you, Steve Christie. Thanks.
Thank you for having me, Bill.
All right. That'll do it up to the midway point of our program. Still much more to come. We've got former Parade Magazine science editor and Comet discoverer, Dr. David Levy, then our legal contributor, Attorney Don Luce. He will be waiting in the wings. We have Don on at about quarter of one, but David Levy's next after the break.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade. Using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana. Plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The newspapers reach more than 75% of the communities each week, with a combined population of more than 50,000. The Green Valley News also publishes a dozen magazines each year, and both newspapers publish up-to-the-minute local news online at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita Sun, it's all right here.
Thinking about a river cruise? Let Bon Voyage Travel guide you to choose the perfect cruise to complement your vacation dreams. River cruising has become more popular than ever, and we know you have so many options to consider when selecting the destination, cruise line, and ship. At Bon Voyage Travel, we provide a comprehensive presentation on the top tips for river cruises and have a team of specialists to assist you. Visit bvtravel.com and view our River Cruise 101 presentation today.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Family owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studio, our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Good time of year to take a trip over to the Land of Enchantment, Silver City, and Grant County, New Mexico. Looking at their forecast into next week, temperatures lows will be in the upper 50s. Hey, there is a hint of fall in the air over in Silver City, where the elevation, 5,000 to 7,000 feet, really so nice for those temperatures, at least 10 degrees cooler than Tucson, and we've got some hot weather ahead of us. But over in Silver City, about 90 degrees, lower 90s, something like that. So great weather, only a three-hour drive. Check it out, southwestnewmexico.org for information about all of the recreation opportunities and great places to stay and dine as well in a beautiful area of the southwestern United States. Joining us on our live line, Dr. David Levy from his observatory in Vail, Arizona, our contributor on science, former science editor of Parade Magazine, head of and founder of Sharing the Sky Science Educational Organization. Dr. Levy, one of the most successful comet discoverers in history. David, how are you, sir?
Hi, Bill. It's good to be with you, and I want, before anything else, to apologize that I missed last month. It's no excuses, and I'm really sorry about that, but I'm here today.
I am so glad you are back with us, and I'll tell you, so much has happened this summer, and a lot's happened in your life as well.
Yeah,
both of us losing our angels, you losing Wendy, and of course, myself losing Ann 3 weeks ago today. Very, very hard.
Yeah. I really could begin by saying I cannot begin to imagine what you're going through, but Bill, I can.
Yes.
I can, because I lost Wendy last year, and with your case, you really didn't have any time to get ready for it.
Except
that I didn't. We had a doctor who was very good, but had no bedside manner whatsoever.
Yeah.
And a physician's assistant who was really very, very good, but a bit of a Pollyanna. So I would, like you, I was not prepared for it, and you never can be.
No.
One of the worst days that I've been through in the last year, I decided to write a poem about losing Wendy, and I would like to share that with you right now.
Please do.
Wendy amongst the stars. Each day I awake. Today is the day. I look towards her. She is not there. My heart goes on, but do I care? Will anything let in a ray? The night is dark as coal. The sky is stars from west to east, from south to north, just like a feast, a pill heaven sent to calm my soul. A telescope stands, it stands and waits. For my eye, it asks just one brief look, forward through space like an open book, and backward through time, open wide its gate. I see a star. Why is it there? Lapis philosophorum, philosopher's stone. That strikes the night, it ushers me home, as part of a pattern to learn, I dare. But reason not, general relativity, gravity's geometry, no speck of thought, no idea works, no system bought, a newborn thought of creativity. She's a part of me, a beam of light amongst the stars, in the sky a star, not there, but there, her soul so far, from grief to joy, all through the night. I am so sorry, Bill. I'm so sorry.
Thank you, David. Beautiful poem. All right. There is a comet, a new comet. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah. Comet Nishimura was discovered just a few weeks ago, and it is brightening. I was able to see it on the 29th of August very easily and with my telescope, and it's a possibility that it'll be visible without a telescope next week. But with comets, you really never know. Comets do what they want. Comets are like cats. They both have things, and they both do precisely what they want.
Yeah.
And if we see it, we see it. If we don't, we don't. It's going to be a lot easier through a telescope or binoculars. But comets are very individualistic creatures. Yeah.
David, could you take a quick question from a listener? All right. Let's go to the live line presented by Rincon Ventures, Real Estate and Property Management. Go ahead.
Yeah, my question is, if Shoemaker Levy missed Jupiter and came down the middle of the Pacific Ocean, what will you experience here? How big the tsunami would be on the West Coast?
That's a good question. And if Shoemaker Levy 9 had collided with the Earth landing in the Pacific Ocean, the West Coast of the United States would get a tsunami probably worse than any earthquake that we have felt. It would send a wall of water maybe a kilometer high.
Oh.
And it would be very, very damaging. Fortunately, Shoemaker-Levy 9 did not collide with the Earth. Instead, it collided with Jupiter, and all we had to do was watch.
And what a spectacular explosion in 1994. Probably the most spectacular explosion, I think, David Levy, we have ever witnessed in the solar system, right?
Yes, it is. Yes. Shoemaker-Levy 9 was really something else, and something that 30 years ago we would never be able to, hopefully we will never see here, but we will at some day, probably there's about a 50-50 chance that within the next 100,000 years we will see something like that.
Okay. Never know. Quickly, David, before we let you go, the meteor showers for the autumn, early autumn, starting up.
Well, there are meteor showers. I saw a meteor just last night, probably from the Oregon meteor shower, which actually hit us about a week ago. Very weak, but you still see a meteor from time to time. And in fact, I saw one just last night while observing through my telescope.
Very cool. David Levy, always a pleasure. We'll talk to you in early October. Thank you, David.
Forward to it. And thank you, Bill, and you take care.
Thank you. You too. All right. The consular is in the house. Attorney Don Luce will be next on the Buckmaster Show right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
The Regional Transportation Authority plan is funded by a voter-approved half-cent sales tax. The RTA tax is collected throughout Pima County and averages about $100 million in revenue each month. The RTA is the largest annual funder of regional transportation projects in the region. The RTA tax funds priority projects that were approved by voters in 2006. See details in the latest RTA annual report at rtamobility.com. Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary, home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and Pima politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show in the Green Thing Zocalo Village Studios. Joining me in studio for his monthly visit with us, Attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group with offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Mr. Luce is the Buckmaster Show legal contributor, and he's the author of two very popular books, Arizona Laws 101, A Handbook for Non-Lawyers, and Estate Planning in Arizona, What You Need to Know. Both books are in their second printing. Hey, Don, how are you?
I'm good, Bill.
So we've got Arizona's top two Republican lawmakers saying doctors have no legal right to challenge the 2021 ban on abortions. What's that all about, Don?
All right. So this case is on appeal to the Ninth Circuit. It was decided in Arizona, and it was decided against the doctors who are challenging the 2021 law. And the law is fairly limited, but they contend that it's an important issue because the law as written presents a gray area that poses doctors to the threat or risk of prosecution. What the statute says is that it is illegal to terminate a pregnancy knowing that the abortion is sought solely because of a genetic abnormality of that child. That's what the statute says. The doctors who are challenging that law say that it's unclear as to when or under what circumstances they would be legally able to perform an abortion if there is a problem with the fetus, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so they're saying that because of this uncertainty, the law needs to be tossed. Now, they took it to the district court here in Arizona before the Dobbs decision. And your listeners may know that Dobbs was the Supreme Court case that overturned Roe versus Wade and its progeny, Casey. Those cases, which the court had decided going back to 1973, in other words, 50 years ago, the court said were not well-founded and they would no longer follow that precedent, finding specifically that there is no constitutional right to abortion. Roe said there was. The court recently said there's not. So before Dobbs, the district court here in Arizona actually sided with the doctors and said the legislature in 2021 had no legal right to impose a ban on abortion for this reason. However, once Dobbs was decided, the defendants went back to court and the court reversed itself.
Oh.
And what the court said was because of Dobbs, in a follow-up hearing, the judge gave essentially the go-ahead for Arizona to start enforcing the law. So the plaintiffs now have the case on appeal to the Ninth Circuit, and what they're saying is that the law is unenforceable because of these uncertainties that exist regarding the enforcement of the statute, and they want the Ninth Circuit to issue an injunction to prevent the state from enforcing it. Well, one of the interesting facts is that the governor recently issued an executive order removing the power from county attorneys to prosecute abortion-related cases and giving it to the Attorney General, Chris Mays. Chris Mays is a Democrat, and Mays has said that she doesn't intend to bring charges against any doctor who violates any abortion laws. So the defendants in this case are saying, well, there's no threat to you. There's no potential harm. You don't have standing to bring this case because in Arizona, the top law enforcement officer being the attorney general, has said that she's not going to prosecute these kinds of things. And so the doctors are saying, well, it doesn't matter. There is still the potential that later on down the road, when we have maybe a new attorney general with different views, or we have a new governor, that this statute, if it remains on the books, would be enforced or enforceable and put us in harm's way. So those are the issues that are currently before the Ninth Circuit. You have a group, actually two groups, I believe, who are challenging the statute, and you have the lawmakers who are defending the statute, and the Ninth Circuit is going to make a decision on whether they're going to grant the doctors group's request to issue an injunction. We'll wait and see.
Clarity, Don Luce. That's what I think the public wants on this issue.
Well,
because you know, we can go back to 1864. There was a law on the books in Arizona about abortion. We need clarity here.
Well, and that's still up in the air. It's whether that territorial area law banning all abortions is still viable.
Right.
And then there's another movement afoot, which is to put an initiative on the next ballot, which would amend the Arizona Constitution to guarantee the right of women to terminate a pregnancy. So, and going back to what the Dobbs case said, was we are returning the issue to the states.
Yes.
That the 14th Amendment doesn't provide a constitutional right. It's a matter of state law, and the people are going to decide this through their elected representatives. And we're seeing that play out in the various states, including Arizona, which is trying to resolve these conflicting issues. Some of the resolution will be judicial, and some of the resolution may be through ballot initiatives, which we've seen from past elections are very powerful ways to change the law.
Unlike in Mexico, which just struck down the whole criminal code for abortion, here you have a national kind of blueprint, legal blueprint on this issue. In the United States, it's pretty much every state to decide on this issue.
That's exactly right. And I would suggest that there is not enough uniformity of opinion at the federal level for Congress to address the issue in a uniform way. So I think what will happen and what will continue to happen is that these solutions, if you will, to these legal problems will be decided on a state-by-state basis.
Let's talk a little bit about the verifying signatures on early ballots. There's a lot of confusion now. Election officials pretty much in every county of Arizona may have to change the way their procedures shape up when it comes to verification of signatures.
Maybe. So there is a case pending in Yavapai County Superior Court. It involves that very issue, whether the various county recorders can verify signatures on early ballots by looking at different documents purportedly bearing the voter's signature, earlier signatures. Mm-hmm. And so the judge in that case was asked by the Secretary of State, who's the defendant, to toss the case, to dismiss it, saying that the procedures that are currently in effect are fine. They're consistent with the elections procedure manual that the Secretary of State has put out, and that the various recorders can look at documents purporting to bear the signature of the voter to determine if the signature on the early ballot is genuine. The judge in that case refused to dismiss the case. And in refusing to dismiss the case, limited pretty much the way that the county recorders can verify signatures, saying that they have to compare the signatures with the voter's registration record, which is the thing that you sign when you register to vote. And other signature specimens, like on earlier envelopes that you would have sent in with your previous early ballots, you can't compare the signatures to those. You have to go back to the registration
to the
form,
original document.
To the original document.
This additional vetting could just be a nightmare.
Well, the statute that is in play here states that when receiving an early ballot, the recorder has to compare the signature with the signature of the elector on the elector's registration record. And the trial judge is saying that that is very specific, that the registration record is a single document. It is the document that was signed when you registered to vote. And the Secretary of State is taking a more broad interpretive view, saying no, it can be anything that constitutes part of that voter's record. And I found out something very interesting in looking at this, and that is that the recorders actually compile essentially files on each voter. So if you're signing something and sending it in, they'll probably keep it. And that then forms one of the bases for them to compare future early ballots to make sure that you're the person that's signing it and sending it in. Because they'll look at, like, the last election's early ballot, the envelope that you sent in with your signature. The trial judge in this case is saying that the statute doesn't permit that, that there's only one source document, and that's the registration record, and you're not, the county recorders are not permitted to look at other signature specimens for the voter. So the Secretary of State's saying in response, well, that's silly. People's signatures change over time.
What if it was 40 years ago?
Exactly. You know, a lot of people have been registered to vote for decades.
Yeah.
And I would venture to say that in many cases, the signature that they're using today is not the same signature that they used 30 years ago.
Hey, shaky hand with shaky hand with age. So
anyway, this case is very, very early in the adjudication process. The court has not entered an order, but the judge denied a motion to dismiss the case brought by the Secretary of State, and in support of the denial, essentially made those comments.
Well, we'll see. But it's in the early stages, right?
It is. Okay. So what would likely be the course is that the trial court at some point will issue a ruling, which then can be appealed to the Court of Appeals, and the Supreme Court could then take it up from the appellate level. But the holding, again, is that pursuant to the statute, the recorder is to compare the signature on the envelope with the voter's prior registration. If they match, then the vote is counted. If they don't, then the recorder has the ability to contact the voter, that's permitted, by phone, and determine if, in fact, that voter signed the early ballot, so they can verify it telephonically, and the judge was perfectly happy with that process.
Okay, Don Luce, Attorney Don Luce of the Luce Law Group offices in Tucson and Phoenix. Arizona Laws 101, a handbook for non-lawyers and estate planning in Arizona, what you need to know, both books authored by Attorney Luce, and they are available both in their second printing. Don, thanks for being with us.
Thanks, Bill.
That'll do it for today's show. Bill Buckmaster on behalf of Don Luce and Tom, engineering and producing our show. Hope everybody has a great afternoon.